listener production.
G'day, welcome along to episode 78 of the Howie Games Part B featuring V8 superstar Scott McLaughlin. Let's dive right back in. Emma Murray, which is a massive part of your story. Mm. Where and how do you get introduced to Emma Murray?
Jack Revolt.
Jackie boy.
Yeah. So I took Jack for a ride in my car in 2017. That was through Tim Hodges, and I've become great mates with Jack since then. But he was like, hey, I think you should talk to this lady. She helped us a lot when we won the premiership.
Richmond Footy Club.
Yeah, that year. And just speak to her. If it works for you, it works. But I think he just wanted to reach out and say that he gave it the opportunity for me to talk to Emma. Now, Emma works in mindfulness, which is, it's not psychology, I don't think. That's what she says. It's more, it's just, I don't think she even likes that word. Mindfulness is just, it's a professional sport, mindfulness, I think that's what she says. But she basically listened to me, talked to me, and now I go through, she's got strategies that I take into races that keep me calm. But that's how it all started, yeah.
She says in the book, which I was actually reading to my daughter last night, as I told you before.
The pickle.
Yeah. That's right. I'm glad you're listening, Scotty.
Yeah, I know what's going on.
She says, no matter what the sport or who the athlete, the biggest threat to any team or individual performance will always be a fear of failure and a focus on the outcome. Mm-hmm. So you go and see her for the first time.
That's hands down what 2017 was, though. That's hands down what I was, what I thought about. I was focused on outcome,
right,
and had a fear of failure.
Yeah,
because I didn't want to race a race.
So, how big was your fear of failure going to be going into 2018 when you're all of a sudden the bloke that lost the unlosable?
Mm. Well, and everyone said, you know, he's going to come back with lots of, you know, pumped up and ready to go, but there's so much more to it than
there
that.
There is,
yeah. And I remember Emma. Basically got a hold of me straight away and we just drained a lot of that out. She basically spoke to me about what had happened and she couldn't believe how much it just crumbled on me. But I remember walking out of my first session with Emma and just going, literally my life's changed. I rang my mum and dad, I rang Carly, we were 2 minutes away from our house, but I had to ring her. Jack, I rang. Rang my engineer, Ludo. I said, I'm a different bloke.
What changed?
I just.
What were you when you went in, and what were you when you went?
I had a lot of baggage.
So you hadn't talked about it.
No, not often, but it was. I had spoken it to people, but not in the way that she looked at it. And she had answers where I didn't have answers before. So I had answers to what had happened. I had solutions to what to make it better. And I think that's what I was most excited about. I had a long way to go after that first meeting to get better and my mindset to be better. And I was scarred, absolutely scarred. But she had that belief and trust in my ability and my what I could do. If I stuck to what she taught me, I'd come back stronger, and I certainly did.
So what type of stuff did she teach you, mate? And this is a year relationship, so I'm sure she taught you a lot of things. But if you had to sort of put it in a concise way, what type of messages did she teach you?
It's so vanilla, but it's best execution. There's another word called acceptance. So accepting results, accepting how it is going to be, but accepting that no matter what, say Holden's got a great car or Van Gisbergen's great on this track, none of that in that area affects how I perform on the day, how I execute in the car. No one can touch that. No one can put parity on that. No one can do anything. It's purely up to me how I perform. So she put a lot of emphasis on me focusing on myself and breathing techniques. So we did a lot of meditation before the race to get me in the visualize what I can do, and I still do it today in my races. Visualize the track, visualize if I do have a problem area, I visualize doing that right, and then not that it instantly goes bang, that's we're good, but it's purely like a, you know, it's a belief, I guess, in some ways. She's taught me also to have some swagger, have some, I'm the best there is, have some, you know, believe that, you know, which I didn't have. I blame my mum and dad a bit because I was very told that, you know, down earth, you don't, humility, you're not better than anyone, you know,
humility.
Yeah, and I think that that affected me because I always thought there was other people, nah, I'm not that good. I'm just like, I've got a great car, great team, all that sort of stuff. But Emma was like, you are good. You know, you not many people can do what you can do in a car. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's probably true. So she taught me to believe in myself more. And yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's what the American athletes are so good at, aren't they?
It's that unreal.
Belief. That's why I love watching the way they perform. Not so much the way they perform, but the way they speak. It's not...
So, Ricky Bobby, I'm the best there is.
Well, it is, you know. Like, here, if Buddy Franklin kicks 13, it's all about, oh, I couldn't have done it with the boys. And, you know, and if he said otherwise, he'd be called a tall poppy. But there, if, you know, if LeBron shoots 45 and wins in the championship, he's like, oh, I'm the man.
Yeah.
Because he is.
Yep.
And he believes it. And because he believes
it's like
it.
Jordan back in the day.
Yeah. You know, because they believe it, they are, which is what you're talking about.
Yep. And I think, you know, mindfulness not talk that much about, but it's been taken on board by a lot of teams, and even back in the Chicago Bulls from the 90s, like they there's a book about them, and I just read it. Emma put it on to me about the mindful athlete, I think it's called, but it talks about, you know, Jordan and how he went about his business, and that point where they're like in Zen phase, like, you know, where everything slows down, and that's legit. But they are so they have massive egos, but that's what makes them perform so well. I wouldn't say I'm probably to the point where I'm like that
now. I'm not sure you're smoking cigars and rolling like Jordan just yet, Scotty.
No, but I'm certainly got a lot more belief in my own ability now.
So how much through the season of 2018 are you in contact with Emma?
Every before every race.
Before every race. On the phone.
So I probably speak to her like on the Wednesday before I go to the track.
Yep.
We have like a little talk. You know, how I feel going to this race. You know, there's no such thing as a bad track. It's purely just how you execute. And then at the race, it was probably before each session or at the end of practice night, I'll speak to her, and then I'll speak to her just before qualifying, visualize some laps, and then do a bit of a debrief. You know, I'll probably speak to her post race. You know, on a Tuesday or something like that. Where I went wrong, even if it went really good, if I won every race, you know, I'll speak to her, you know, what was I proud of, what wasn't I proud of, and she's really made me analyse a lot of things. A
couple of points from the season, you had some great races, and it became a battle between you and Shane Van Gisbergen. After New Zealand, on the Saturday, where he won, you came second. There's an interesting incident where, well, you described the incident to me in Parc Fermé, so for those that don't follow the sport, Parc Fermé is the top three cars go and park in an area before they go up to celebrate, etc.
Yeah, so you always park in behind the 1, 2, and 3 board. So this instance, I finished second behind Shane. We had a great battle. We you know, raced hard and fair. And so Shane pulled up on the 1 board. I pulled up on the 2 board. Just as I was about to get out, I noticed Shane's driving really close to my car and basically parked me in, just like at the Coles supermarket.
So you couldn't open the door to get out?
Yeah, I couldn't get out. So I was locked in there. So I had to wait till they pulled my car back, and I was so pissed off. I actually wanted to get out and say, you know, I blocked him pretty hard in the race and he hit me and whatever, and it was a good battle. But I was going to get out and say, hey, mate, good job, good race. After that, I've never been so, like, probably disrespected in some ways in my life. So I was like, oh, whatever, this is how it's going to be. And there was nothing like a bit of a fire in the belly. He says it was a mistake. I call him out on it and have done. I think he drives a car at 250 k's an hour, millimetres off the wall. I think he knows where to position his car at 5 k's an hour.
I think you might be right. You spoke in the press comments. So then the funny thing about any sport, you've got to sit right next to him. And now it's funny looking back, were you saying you needed with Emma to have some more swagger? You basically said to him, mate, I'll get you back tomorrow.
Yeah.
And also in the Parc Fermé, just at the end, Scotty had a bit of trouble getting out of the car. Firstly, talk us through from your...
I didn't even realise I did it till after, and it was pretty awkward. I apologise for that. I was just excited to jump out, get on the roof and start cheering. And that was a bit of an awkward one. Sorry about that.
Scotty?
This is what it is. Obviously, it was a mistake.
I'm sure you'll get me back for it.
When tomorrow and you come second, I will.
That to me, and I looked at it again last night, it's interesting you say about the swagger. That was all of a sudden Scotty with swagger.
Yeah, well, that people didn't know about. But they yeah, it was in the press conference, they asked me, they go, oh, you know, are you, I can't remember, will you get him back tomorrow? Will you park him in? I can't remember what they said, but I said, I'll just win tomorrow, mate. I'll get you back tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think I said that in the press conference. And
there was that nice frostiness.
Yeah. It was not, like, I didn't say it out of spite or whatever. It was purely like, just like, all right, you know, this is how it's going to be. Let's do it. And look, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Shane. I race him high. He is seriously good racer. And we give each other not one bit too much, but enough. You know, like, we race each other hard and fair, but that was BS. That whole incident, and I was very disappointed about the whole thing. So that spurred me up to go, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to win this championship. And I've never, I think he shot himself in the foot, I reckon.
Cause yeah.
I think if we didn't have that fire in the belly, it still would have been hard.
So we get to the last race, the championship.
Mm.
1 year later, what's the point score this time?
So it's literally, I think it's 72 points. All I had to do was finish. Yeah, I think it was like 10th or something. So
very similar situation.
Seriously, I go into a full blown panic attack before the race.
This is before the race on Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
So just prior to that, Shane had just beaten you.
Yes,
the championship
you're okay.
So you're going into the weekend.
Yeah.
You think you're going to win. You're going to extend your championship lead, and then they get you on the radio.
Yeah. So this Saturday. Yeah. So I'm winning the race. I've been told 10 to go, you're good on fuel. 2 to go, my fuel light comes on. I've run out of juice. Shane's 6 seconds behind me, but coming out fast, he's got plenty of fuel. And I'm on fumes with 2 corners to go, and Shane passes me and wins the race. And then it's a 2-point lead. I've only got a 2-point lead going into Sunday.
He's got Van Gisbergen up on the outside of him. There's just 2 corners to go. He makes a lunge down the inside. Van Gisbergen's going to grab it. Shane Van Gisbergen's gone to the lead. We're out of fuel for car 17. McLaughlin's going to struggle to the line. Red Bull are going to pull one out of the fire here. 150 points to Shane Van Gisbergen. What an extraordinary finish.
But then he got penalised after the race for a pit stop infringement by his team. I actually don't even know what it was. Can't remember, but he got done for that. So that gave me the gap that I had on Sunday. He got penalised, and I actually got gifted the race win.
So then you are leading by
72 points. 72 points. So
just prior to that, going into the weekend, I presume you're talking with Emma. But looking back, what was your mindset?
I was really calm.
Right.
I had Emma. I was that word acceptance come up. Execution. I was calm with how I was. I knew I was fast the year before. I was happy. I was happy where I was. But then the only time where I started flipping out was that Sunday. You know, I was like really nervous, and I think I ran from when Shane got the penalty. I found out about the penalty the night before on the Saturday to race start. I think I rang her like 25 times.
And I
was full-blown breakdown.
What does that mean in your words, full-blown breakdown?
Like just panic attack. I hyperventilated. Going back, like Sunday, you qualify. I qualified really well. I focused. I qualified second on the grid, exactly what I needed to do. So I felt good. But it was what really got me was everyone come up to me saying, bring it home, mate. You know, make up for last year, all this like crap. And I'm just like, hey, it's nice. And I'm like, thanks, mate, thank you. And then I just got too much. Got to a point where I was just like, go away, like leave me alone. I didn't say that to him, but I didn't want it. And then I'm up in the suite. We do a lot of sponsorship stuff, and I'm upstairs doing signings.
The morning of the race?
No, this is about an hour before the race.
Right.
Signing. And this is different in our sport. We're not like AFL. We have signing sessions. Like that's like being in a locker room an hour before the game. You know, it doesn't happen in sport.
There's time.
That's
to
another
yourself,
thing.
Is
yeah,
it?
No, and that's the difference with our sport. But it's fine. We do it. But anyway, so I'm signing away, and all of a sudden I'm just losing my breath. I'm like flipping out, and then I start like getting dizzy, and I had to have a sit down. I was I wasn't dehydrated or anything. I'd been drinking plenty. I just was purely having a panic attack. And I rang Emma. She's like, get a grip, get an effing grip. And blew me up and
said, so she was hardcore direct about it.
100%. She said, you know, this does not affect you. Like, you execute the, and then calm down. And she recalled, because she said a similar thing to Dusty Martin, I think, in the prelim the grand final. And she recounts in the book, but she said that it was a very similar circumstance where, like, I was panicking and whatever. But yeah, I remember just, she calmed me down, and before the race, I remember completely being focused and ready to go. And I knew that once I got in the car, I was in my happy spot. I was away from everyone and I could focus on what I needed to do. I knew that when I got in the car, I knew exactly what I needed to do and I could execute. But before that, I was still fretting. I was flipping out, yeah.
Back to Scotty in a sec. The last episode of the Howie Games featured the first non-European to wear the fabled yellow jersey in the Tour de France, Phil Anderson, a.k.a. Skippy. Phil certainly resonated a lot with you, our listeners, who loved Phil's old school stories. How hard is the Tour de France?
Oh, look, it's very hard, but it's not like you just go from a sedentary life to into the Tour de France. You've been doing other events leading up to it, which prepare you for it. But still, the Tour de France is in itself obviously very demanding, and
it can be hot, very it tough. Can be snowing, yeah, it can
yeah,
be
yeah. It's 3 weeks in the middle of summer, and it always encompasses the two big mountain ranges of the Alps and the Pyrenees, and then sometimes it hit some of the other mountain ranges too. There's some others over in the northeast of France. It can be windy, it can be raining.
Where's the joy? Where is the joy? There must be joy.
The joy is when it stops.
Right. Like banging your head against a wall, Phil.
Exactly, yeah, that's right.
That's Phil Anderson on episode 77 of the show. Pretty big back catalogue building up now. Go back and listen. You may have missed some of the ones that you may have liked to listen to. Report back on social media to me at MarkHoward03 with your thoughts. Alrighty, back to Scotty.
So is the whole process over a year before you get to the actual race, has it worked, or there's still holes in it due to the fact that you've rang her 25 times when the pressure was at its greatest? Yeah. I don't know the answer to that.
I think there's still holes in my execution, how my mindset is. But you can never get rid of, you can't cut out what happened in 2017. There's always going to be stuff pop out. I'm human. And that's what Emma says as well. I'm only human. Those things are going to always pop up. Yeah. And certainly did.
So you get in the car and you're calm.
Yeah, I was
and
good.
And you're confident and you're happy.
I was fine. I was obviously a bit nervous, but I knew exactly what I needed to do, and I had to focus. All I was doing was focusing on, all right, what I need to do at the start here, and all right, if Reynolds gets, who was on pole next to me, if Reynolds gets a nice start, all I'm going to do is just back out, slot in, be safe, get in behind him and chase him down. Everything went to plan. First corner went good, and then the next thing was not speeding the pits and executing what I needed to do, pull up on the marks for the guys to change the tyres and then get going. So I just broke the race up into positions. But a big thing for me and Emma, we talk about, is breath. So we have a system where if I do start fretting out, or I start thinking about, there's a couple of times during the race where I thought about the outcome, but if I do start thinking about that, to focus, I've got I breathe a couple of breaths, I have a drink and stretch my hands. I do that if I start losing my mind. So if you see on TV I'm doing this and stuff, it's just because I'm like a bit...
So like a reset.
Yeah, it's like a reset. It's just like a bang, all right, back on. Reset the focus. And, I thought it was all BS, half of this stuff. I didn't think it was, anything. But it is truly something. It's so real, all this mind stuff, yeah.
So the closing stages of the race, you're leading, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm leading. So
Dave's desperate for a win behind you.
Yeah, and I'm driving half second under what I needed to do. I'm not hitting the wall because I don't want to smack my mirror off, because I don't want to cause a safety car. So 10 to go, and then Dave's coming at me hard. He wants to win a race, and that's cool.
just on that, before you get to that, when you say you're driving half a second slower, if you're on the edge, right, at 100% of what you're trying to do, and you're half a second slower, in percentage terms, this always fascinates me, how much safer is that lap for you when you're half a second slower? Like, is it 10% safer or 50% safer because you've taken half a second
off? I think 50. It's different for every driver, but I was driving literally 50%. I was backing off early.
So you're not going to make a mistake in that situation, dropping half a second?
It's easy to lose focus, but no, not for me with what I've been going through with Emma. I knew exactly. I was just driving to what I needed to do.
Right.
So that was driving at 50%. But not losing focus, I was just driving at 50% because that's what I needed to do to execute.
Yep. Go on. Dave's pushing.
Yeah, Dave's pushing. He's coming at me with lights on, all that sort of stuff. He's getting very close. I wanted to win the race, but I didn't want to spray what I had.
Why would you ever consider, this is from a non-athlete asking you this question, you can finish second, you can finish third, you can finish sixth, you're the champion, Scotty, and no one will ever remember where you finished in that race. Why do you even care about wanting to win?
Who I am, who races are.
I guess that's why you're successful.
We want to win races. You know,
can you see how I could ask that
absolutely.
Question?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I understand. And even me asking myself that question, it is stupid. But
did Scotty McLaughlin win the 2018 championship? Yes. Where did he finish in that race in Newcastle?
I don't know.
Wouldn't have a clue.
I might not remember one day.
Yeah.
But the fact of it's just you need. I want. I go into a race. Formula One driver goes in the race. They want to win every race. Doesn't matter where they are. Same with me. I want to go in and I want to. There's no. Why are we turning up if we just want to finish second? But and I was in a position to win, so I wanted to do it. But the smart people behind the wall basically told me, all right, let Reynolds go. When I did do that, that's when I started losing focus a lot. So I was breathing. I was going crazy trying to calm myself down because I was looking at the big screens and because obviously the cameras were following.
So there's time to do that in the car?
Yeah, there's time to do it. Like, because it's street tracks. You actually use the big screens a lot. Because it's a tool for knowing where your competition is, or if there's a problem on the track, like say if there's a crash, you can find out what corner it is. If the team don't know, sometimes you know better than them. So it's funny enough, it sounds stupid. It sounds like, why are you looking at the big screen for? But it's actually a tool. So you use that. So I was, that's when I started losing some focus and started thinking, oh my God, I could actually win this. That's probably when I started driving at like 20% because I was just like, just bring it home for God's sakes, you idiot. You know, I was just. And then the start of the year, lap to go, it was like, all right, I literally have one more lap. I literally just have to get around. And I basically, when I let Reynolds go past, I knew that I had it in the bag, but I just had to bring it home.
How about the elation? Everybody at DJR Team Penske, not just the people that are at the racetrack, but the people that are still back at the workshop. And you can see the tears in this young man's eyes. Extraordinary performance this year. Scotty McLaughlin, he's writing his name into the road at Newcastle.
Absolute adulation. Scotty McLaughlin, you are the 2018 Virgin Australia Supercars champion. Tell us what you think.
Yes! Yes! Oh, man. Thank you to my mum and dad, my gran. I know you're watching up there, mate, because I promised you I'd do this.
So you crossed the line. A year prior, you possibly won the championship.
Yeah.
But then you've found out you've lost it. You go and confront Penske, DJR. You have the worst 24 hours of your life. Does it make it better because of what you went through?
Yeah, but you know what? It was so weird. I've celebrated after a race so much harder when I've just won a normal race. But this one was just, I was just quiet. I was just like, didn't scream. I didn't do it. I was like, oh my God, thank God. Like I was just relieved. I was like, I was so proud and happy and emotional. But I was just like, I had to have a bit of moment to myself. And that was probably the best thing for me, crossing the line and then having probably 7 minutes to get back around to the pits before I absolutely lost my shit. But it was one of those things where I was just able to just go, wow, do a burnout and just, I won the championship. It was just unreal. Never forget it.
quite relevant now. You get the big penguin first.
Yeah, yes.
You get the big penguin.
I'm a big fan. I'm glad I'm getting a question from these guys.
Oh, they're big fans of yours as well. Trust me. They were studying your form last night on YouTube. All right. You get the penguin first.
Okay.
Hi, Scotty, Big Penguin here. Once after cricket training, me and my dad did a big burnout in his ute. We weren't allowed to tell Mummy. Have you ever done a burnout in your racing car?
Yes, mate, I have. That's funny. How was it any good? A little one wheeler?
It was a gravel. Anyway, we won't go into that, Scotty.
No, probably won't. Yes, I have done a couple of my career. I haven't done. I'm not a great one. I'm not a great burnout guy, but the one at Newcastle was pretty cool. I lined her up on the Newcastle sign and started doing loops around it. That was pretty cool and kind of half planned with a couple go.
How do you? I asked you how you think your parents. Do you think Emma or? Okay, before you answer that, without Emma,
does it happen?
Does it happen? You've asked yourself that, obviously.
I have. It's so hard to, I don't know.
You'd like to think yes.
I'd like to think yes, absolutely, from my point of view. But I also think no, because it was like there's a lot of points in that championship, especially the Sunday, where if I was in that position without Emma, I don't know like how I would have coped. Like
you would have been on a different path. It still might have been a winning path.
Absolutely. You never know. I could have still done the right thing. I figured it out myself.
Mm.
But it's interesting. Yeah, but I fully believe I could have done it without myself, without Emma, but she just made me better and made me probably enjoy it more because I knew I could do it.
So when did you speak to her first time afterwards?
Straight after the race, yeah. Just she was one of the first people I called because obviously all my family was there, but she wasn't there. But yeah, spoke to her and I knew she'd be watching on TV, so I sort of thanked her on TV and then rang. But I rang her as I was going to the press conference, had the trophy in my hand, a beer out the top of the trophy, and just said, I can't believe it's happening. She just said, look, go enjoy it, we'll speak after, but I'm so proud of you. And that's the how cool she is. Like, she just was like, didn't want anything. Like, she just wanted me to enjoy it. You can't repay someone like that. Like, she's just one of a kind.
I'm going to sidetrack you for a moment. I've only got a few more questions for you. Your descriptions have been unbelievable, mate. Yeah. And the way you talked about your failure.
People listen.
Well, mate, they will, man. And the way you talked about your failure is as impressive as the way you talked about your success, which is not easy, and you need to be congratulated on that. You're on the top 10 shootout at Bathurst, where you race in qualifying. Your qualifying run is the quickest lap anyone's ever seen there. Talk me through in the car what you do. Talk me through the whole lap. Gears, the works, how it feels in the car. Like
Lap of Bathurst?
Yeah, a lap of Bathurst.
Okay. All right, so, well, basically that's my home, so I'm calm. I know exactly what I need to do. So warm-up laps are a big thing. So you warm up your tyres and you feel like you got across the top of the mountain. And then I get down to the last corner and I want to set myself up. Second gear corner, real strong start to the lap. Second gear, get up to fourth gear, breaking out the 100-meter board, turn one, down to second gear, turn, make the apex, and then use all the exit road on the exit. And then it's a big run up to turn two. Fifth gear, you get up to, hard in the limiter, about 250k, breaking 150-meter board, but you use a lot of the gradient in the road. There's a big hill going up there, so down to third gear, tip it in. Use the camber of the road all the way up the hill, back up the fourth gear, blind corner, so you're down one gear and then you're down another through the cutting. You want to tap the wall on the inside and then tap the wall on the outside on the way out of that. Over the crest, flat out right kink, up to third gear, back it off to about 5% throttle underneath the Fujitsu sign, flat back to fourth gear, and then probably one of the coolest corners is Reed Park, the grate. So I'm aiming for a square piece of metal grate on the edge of the track. That's my apex point. So that's at like 220Ks, mind you. Flat out to that, back off. I use no brake there because I like to flow the car through. Over, this is all fourth gear, clip the wall on the exit, break a little bit at McPhillamy. Well,
by clip the wall, you mean actually touch it?
Yeah, okay. just with the mirror.
Right.
Because that's like your guide. Then I break it. The next corner is McPhillamy, fast left-hander, same gear. Break it at the start of the curb, just a little dab of the brake, and again, flow it through. Very easy to lose the rear here. Then you sort of set yourself up for Skyline. It's a blind crest. You can't see over the road. Then goes down into about a 16% gradient downhill. So I'm third gear, grab it down, clip the wall on the inside of over Skyline. Second gear, clip the curb through the S's, down the dipper, all second gear, flowing it through, down to the Forest Elbow, grabbing third, again, clipping the wall on the exit of those corners, and then set yourself up for a second gear corner at Forest Elbow, which is onto the longest straight in Australia. Up to sixth gear, down Conrod Straight. This time I'm stretching my fingers, I'm relaxing, setting myself up for the chase.
How fast are you going at this point?
About 300K by the end of it. And I'm relaxing, have a tight of the belts, get ready for a big stop. There's a little bit of exit road that you use on the way into the kink. Take that, braking hard into the chase, which is one of the biggest stops in Australia. Sixth gear down a second, so you're braking from 300Ks to probably about 80. Second gear, clip a little bit of the curb, flat out right-hander, and then basically you don't want to stuff your whole lap up and you want to brake as deep as you can in the last corner, but not too deep because you don't want to stuff it. Fourth gear on the limiter, braking about 100 meter board, down the gears, down the second, turn a left, and hopefully at the end of it, so 2 minute 3.8, which I did.
And when it was?
Oh, flipped out. Like I was just, I'll never forget that moment. I was just, I knew I could do the time, but when it came up, I was just in awe.
This might be the biggest lap ever at Mount Panorama. And McLaughlin comes to the line.
Yeah!
Scale fast. Woo! We stand and salute, mate. Brilliant.
Thank you so much. Oh my god. Oh guys, I dreamt of doing this since I was a kid.
I was just, yeah, to have that track, Bathurst, to yourself for 2 minutes by yourself, there is nothing like it in the world in motorsport. I feel it's just, it's such a cool place, and the crowd is almost as big as race start on Sunday. Yeah, it's huge.
In some ways, it's the best part of the weekend. I got another question for you on that. Like the previous question I asked you about trying to win the race, I've seen 10, 12 top 10 shootouts, and it's my favourite part of the weekend, more so than the race. But why would you drive 11 tenths the day before a race, when you're on pole that goes for 1,000 kilometres, I don't know what the stats are of pole winners at Bathurst, but it's almost irrelevant the way the race is run now.
It's just how we're wired, isn't it? It's just,
it makes no sense.
It doesn't.
At all.
No, and when you put it
into the wall, the blokes are up all night, and you might not have a good race car.
You don't drive to that point. Like, you don't drive to the point where you're going to fence it.
Okay.
But if you have confidence in your car and confidence in your own ability, you can do something pretty cool, something pretty special, and that's why you go out and do it. So I love that part of the week. Like you said, it's completely irrelevant, but in the grand scheme of things, the pole at Bathurst is probably one of the best outcomes of your career.
Good enough to climb the fence, start waving at the crowd.
Oh, mate, and that's what I love. I love interacting with everyone. I'll get up on the fence and just enjoy it. You got to. You know, you live once, there's not often, I'm only going to be doing this for 10 years, so 10 more years, so I try and enjoy every bloody moment I've got.
We're going to get to that 10 years, but now you get the pickle.
The pickle.
You get the pickle, who was, it's funny what they pick up, she was watching, they were watching that Bathurst lap, and the first thing they was like, why weren't you interviewing him, Dad? I said, no, I was,
problems.
Here we go, righto. Funny what they come up with, these two. All right, you now get, hang on, you get the pickle. Oh, hang on.
That's technology.
Here we go.
Hi, Scott. Scotty Pickle here. We think it's great when you get pole position, and we think it's so cool when you get that big ginormous check. Do you actually have to take that to the bank?
Yeah.
And do you get to keep all the money?
She started to me last night, Daddy, does he walk into the bank with that thing and do they give him money?
She's all over, isn't she?
Yeah.
No, no. My first ever pole check, I literally walked in. I knew I couldn't check it, but I just walked in with it.
Did you?
Yeah, and into like a Westpac. I'm like, hey, I want to check this. And the lady was like flipping out. She's like, you can't do that here. And she thought I was a bit weird. So I did that. And but no, so you can't do that. But all the checks that the team get, they all go towards our Christmas party fund.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So, how many poles do you have this year?
This year we've had 7.
And last year?
Last year was 13 and the year before was 16.
That was a good Christmas
yeah,
party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And but if you win it, you get an extra 10 grand. So,
right.
So all of that stuff plus if they win the Pit Stop Challenge, it's like 20 grand for the team. So that's it all goes to a Christmas fund.
Wow, I need to get the Christmas
party.
It's a
bloody good party, especially the one that we just had after Newcastle.
Oh, I bet
legit,
it was.
Legit.
You mentioned 10 years to go. The likes of two different paths. Jamie Wincup, was he won 7 championships? And fantastic bloke, fantastic driver.
Mm.
Big, big fish in a world sense in a small pond.
Yeah.
Marcus Ambrose won a couple of championships and thought, right, I want to go to America
mm-hmm.
and be whatever size fish in an enormous pond.
Mm-hmm.
Which of those are you?
Oh, I'm probably more the Ambrose way. I'm a guy that once I've done something, I don't plan on, I don't think I need to stick around to do whatever. I'm have a amount of respect for Jamie's unprecedented. He's unreal and what he's done. But he's ticked all the boxes for me. I would have gone, you know, 5 years ago, try and break into something else. But at the end of the day, this is the most competitive category in the world. I can see why he stuck around. But I would love to. NASCAR's always been a dream of mine. I'd love to have a crack at it. I'm in a great team that potentially could open the door. But
because Penske's obviously involved in NASCAR. They won NASCAR, didn't they, with old mate Joey
Logano? Last year.
Logano.
Last year they were champions.
Gee, you've tested my motorsport knowledge there, Scotty. Crikey, that's really on edge for me.
Hey, it's good.
So there's a pathway there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm employed here to be a supercar driver. I know that fully, and I've spoken to these guys, but I have told them that I would love to have a crack one day. And whether that's a one-off race, whether that's going over there full-time. I have American missus now, so I can see myself living in America one day. But it's, you know, I understand that I've got to wait for my opportunity. I'm young, I'm lucky, I'm 25, 26 this year. But I want to tick off Bathurst. Bathurst is, for me, you know, I always put it above the championship, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I would love to tick that off before I go anywhere.
So what if you won Bathurst in 2019? You're a series champion, you're a Bathurst champion.
Well, I'm good. I'm content.
Right, you're content
here. I just got to wait for the call.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, whether I get a call, whether I don't, I'm happy to do whatever I need to do.
If you got a call with potential?
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
Only if I've done what I wanted to do. And my team over here is set up. I don't want to leave everyone out in the loop. I think, you know, I bring a lot to the team along with my teammate Fabian. We, you know, we have a good relationship. I know that if I did leave, it would be a bit of a hole. So it's like, I know that we need to have it set up here because it's a business here for Penske and for DJR. Like, you know, they need to be at the front. They need to be confident they got someone to be able to go on with it.
Have you got the energy to do it again? Have you got the energy to start back at the bottom of the pit lane?
100%. I think I want to learn. I want to learn a different... That would be cool to learn a different type of racing. I've got a lot of passion for NASCAR and American racing. I've always been interested in it. So I would love to learn it, see if I've got it. If I don't, I know how to drive a supercar.
We can always come back, I guess. Just to give people a perspective, you might not know the exact figures. I'm sure they're published. Joey Logano, what was Joey get paid? Ish.
I really don't know. I don't know, but I know that, yeah.
What do the top boys get
in
NASCAR?
I think like Jimmy Johnson's worth 200 mil. I think. I think that's a figure. Yeah.
Right.
I think he's, but he's got a lot of businesses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he's a seven time. He's probably the equivalent of Jamie Wincup in America.
Jamie Wincup hasn't got 200 million, has he?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think he does.
He might be a tight ass.
I think he's going well. Yeah, it's a whole other scale, isn't it? Which, it is. To me, why I asked the question, because I would imagine it would appeal enormously.
I think it, but the appeal for me also, I'm a racer, and racing every weekend, like they race 39, 40 weekends a year, would be unreal. Traveling America.
Do you guys get lost a little bit because you don't?
That we don't race every weekend.
Yeah, so are the V8s on this weekend?
We do, but it would be so hard for us. We just did a back to back on the week on the last couple of weeks, Tasmania, Phillip Island, and it was so hard for the guys. They were away, you know, like 2 weeks in a row. I just don't think we have the what do you call it? The
infrastructure.
Yeah, we don't have that to be able.
We don't have the scale. Don't have the scale to do what they
do. Don't have the scale, don't have the money.
It would be cool to race every weekend.
Oh, it would be. Don't get me wrong.
In front of those crowds.
Yeah, and that's what appeals to me. Absolute money's fantastic, but the way of life in America, I love American life. I love being able to travel America in an RV or at least, you know, go around to a lot of places and see bits and pieces of it would be very cool. It just appeals to me a lot. And, you know, my fiance Carly, she's moved out to Australia for me, and she loves Australia. Don't get me wrong, but you know, one day, you know, I'll probably return the favour.
Home's home, isn't it? At the end of the day, hey, try and distill this as best you can. I always finish this by saying we're lucky enough to have a lot of kids listening, but also people in business, all sorts of people that you get messages from, which is absolutely super. What do you reckon the key to success is, Scotty? Because you've had some brutal lessons along the way.
I think it's believing in yourself and what you do. I think it goes back all the way to when I was 16 years old, getting told I was a rich kid and would go nowhere. It's believing in what you can achieve with the right people around you. You know, anything is possible. And I think I enjoy it. Enjoy life. That's one thing I think a lot of people get so set on is going, and I did. I got caught up and, you know, I missed the days of me and my old man in the trailer and the go-karts. And, you know, I wish a lot I could go back and enjoy those days with my old man maybe more, because we were so focused on that goal. And I think even if I was just that little bit less focused and enjoyed it more, I think I still could have got to where I am now. But I probably would have enjoyed a lot more. So I think believe in yourself, enjoy the ride, and hopefully good things come.
You're a star, mate. Thanks for being so honest.
Thanks
for talking about some tough times. The book is Road to Redemption. Get it from your good bookstores or go to the track. Scotty will sign it for you.
No dramas. Or online.
Online. Yeah. How do we get it online?
10 Bag Press. It's all linked up to my Instagram and all that sort of stuff. So maybe check on the social media and you'll be able to see it.
You're a star, Scotty.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, legend. Appreciate it.
Easy done. Wowzers, I really took something from that episode. I hope you enjoyed Scotty's honesty and integrity as much as I did. He is as nice a bloke as he sounds. Thank you, Scotty, you legend. And if you're listening just before Bathurst, Scotty, go get him, guru. Once again, check out his book, The Road to Redemption. It is a cracker. Thanks to Darcy Thompson, who put this beast together. There was a fair bit involved. And most of all, to you all for giving the show some of your valuable time. It is appreciated. Until the next episode on Thursday, October 24, with Huey Bowman, peace and love.
And we can do it if we try, try, try. If we try, try, try. If we try, try, try.
Listener.